There's a little bit of a typo on the title of the shiur. It says Shafach Mayim Chamim. It means really, really hot water. That's not supposed to be there. It's supposed to be Mayim Chamim. Okay. The background to the Shaila goes back, I would say, close to about 30 years. I was learning in Kerem Yavne. It was a joint ben hazmanim. I was visiting a family from a Riverdale. I was spending Shabbos with them. And one of the kids, one of the teenage children at the time, made a mistake. Their parents asked them to bring them a cup of tea, and they didn't understand what it means, tea scents, all that stuff. So they went to the, in the old days, the tea kettle. They went and took a tea kettle off the fire and took a tea bag and put it into a cup and poured the tea kettle onto the mamish, made a cup of tea. And when they brought it to the table, so the father said, Gavalt, what happened? The child said, Gavalt, what happened? He said, yes, you make a cup of tea. I made a cup of tea. So the Shiloh was, I remember the time, back quite some time ago, remember the Shiloh was, did the Abbot be permitted to drink that tea? So the tree with tea was basically made on Shabbos in a way that it probably, most probably should not have been made. If the fact that he permitted to eat that, it said drink that tea or not. At the time, they posed the question to me. Here I was learning in Yeshiva, so what do I have to say about that topic? So I remember Hemi and Horn were discussing the pros and cons of the Shiloh. So you're probably wondering, why am I talking about that? We've had one or two shilas in the last 30 years, so why am I talking about that now? Because boom, this week, somebody asked me another shila, which brought back memories, reminded me back that shila 30 years ago. So we'll try to knock off two shilas at the same time. This is the more exciting of the two. The shila that the person asked me this week was that they, by mistake, they poured out some food from their milching pot onto their fleshy sink or something, so they wanted to know whether they have to kasha the sink. So the emphasis is that the two shilas are very much related to one another. And as we'll see, as the sugya develops a little bit, we'll see the connection between the two. We'll focus primarily on the Shabbos part, but each time we're going to go back and forth a little bit in the Shabbos and the both B'chol of Shiloh. They're both interesting shilas. So when we analyze the first shilah, the main shilah that we're discussing tonight, about the person to d'eved, make tea in that manner on Shabbos, whether the tea can be, whether you consume the tea on Shabbos or not. So there's a general question. If a person does any malach on Shabbos, bishulah, not matter any of the lamentas malachas, what are the ramifications after the fact? So the Shulchan Aruch, the first of the Mamre Kavos tells us, in Sibin Shin Yud Ches, HaMavashah B'Shabbos, O She'osir Achat B'Shab Malachos, the Rishon Makuk to add on that it's lav dafka bishul. Person cooks on Shabbos, does anything else that's prohibited on Shabbos, bemeis it, if he did it intentionally, so then, then he's not allowed to benefit from that malacha forever. If he does a malacha, the mazid, and now he feels bad about it a week later, he wants to know, Rabbi, can I partake of that food that I cooked, whatever? The answer is no. It was done the mazid, intentionally, it's also the other Lord. But uliyacheirim mutzlam atzah Shabbos b'yad. However, for other people, the malacha was not done for, but for others, they're permitted to benefit from the malacha after Shabbos is over. Now, we're not talking about mazid here, where most mazid people are not asking Shabbos anyway. We're talking about shoyget. What if it happened to Shoyi, like in our case? Also, Bobayom Gam Yachirim, that during the course of Shabbos, no one's allowed to benefit from that malacha, neither the person themselves nor others. But if Shabbos is over, Mutagam Lo Miyad, then everyone's permitted to benefit from the malacha. So basically, we're going to leave out the maze of the equation right now. A malacha that's done to Shoyi, with a bishul or any other malacha, on Shabbos is also, so the Shabbos is over. Both you and others can benefit from that malacha. So it sounds like it's an open and shut case. Namely, if what the person did was a malacha on Shabbos, and even though it was done b'shergeg, without a set of them, I mean, we should have been more careful, but it was b'shergeg. So after the fact, on Shabbos is asur, and after Shabbos is mutter. If what they did was mutter, then obviously there's nothing to talk about. So what they did, was it asur, was it mutter? So the answer is, well, it depends who you ask. There's a big machlekes to be shown him. If the way that they made the tea on Shabbos wasn't in fact permissible or not. Why is it going to impact in our Shaila? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Magen Avraham that whenever there's a machlokas about whether one is permitted to do something or not, if there's a viable opinion out there that action A is permissible, and even though we may not necessarily follow that view, it may not be the accepted view, but if such a real view exists in Halacha, so after the fact, we're going to let you benefit from the malacha. And the only time that we say that after the fact you can't use what you did, that's only if you violated Chil Shabbos according to all opinions. But if what you did was iffy, was shaky in the first place, maybe some opinions would say it was actually permissible, so Lagabi the mechatchila, can I do the action? The answer is no. But lagabi the question, but b'di'evet, can I partake from the food? The answer would be yes. Why the distinction? The answer is obvious, that to do an act of full Shabbos is a nisa deraisa, a safka malacha. So unless we're really convinced halachically that it's permissible, we're going to have to tell you to refrain from acting. But to benefit from malacha Shabbos that was done already after the fact, that prohibition is only midirabbanan. Min haTorah, even if you cook for mezid, you can still benefit, you can eat the food. So the whole prohibition, what we call halacha maisa Shabbos, benefiting from malachas that were done on Shabbos, itself is only a prohibited midirabbanan. So therefore, we're going to be much, much more lenient about this. That's the general rule. That's our take on Hilchos Shabbos after the fact. That if it was mutlachatchil, according to anybody under the sun, any real viable shita, that after the fact we're going to permit it. So now we just have to determine, was it mutlach according to anybody? Is there anybody out there who would permit making tea in that manner? Taking water from a tea kettle, pouring it over a tea bag, isn't that an outright malacha derais abishol? Are there any grounds to be made, according to anybody, thereby permitting it to diabit for us? So we take a look at the second of the Mar Mekamot. Much of our discussion revolves around this simple pshat, how to read a Mishnah. Mishnah tells us in Shabbos and Beis Menelos, Ilfos Vakedera, if you have either a pan or a pot, Shehavira Merusachim, that you take it off of the fire, and it's still very, very hot, still boiling, but it was on the fire at one time. It says the Mishnah, Lo Yitein Musochan Tavlin, you're not permitted to place spices, talk about uncooked spices, you're not permitted to put spices into this pot, even though the pot is not on the fire right now. The reason being, presumably, because it was once on the fire. So since at one time this pot or pan was on the fire, it's what we call in halacha a kli rishon, albeit a kli rishon shelo al gavya esh, it's not on the fire right now, and it's still subject to a prohibition of bishul. But in most opinions, this is a bishul deraisa, even though it's not literally on the fire, it's still subject to a bishul, this a bishul, even on a Torah level. That's the opening line of the Mishnah. If the pot was on the fire, then it's off limits. Aval, what can you do? Well, noisenu v'socha ka'ara o v'socha tamchoi. What you can do is, instead of putting spices into the pot, you can put spices into a plate. You can put spices into some serving dish or something. Why is that? So the reason is because the contents of the pot were emptied into the plate or into the bowl. So now the bowl, the plate, the serving dish is now called the kli sheni. It's already removed from the original kli. And presumably what the Mishnah is telling us is that bishul doesn't take place in a kli sheni. So if you just read the literal meaning of this Mishnah, the Mishnah is telling us two important halachas, that bishul in a kli rishon is off limits. Bishul in a kli sheni, once the contents have been transferred, bishul in a kli sheni is permissible. Now, we shouldn't jump to any conclusions about this. There are other factors involved, and there are other limitations, both the Raisin, the Rabbanan, and Kli Sheni, based on other sugyas. But again, we're not learning real, really bishul right now. We're just focusing on this one point that's relevant for our shiur. So, Kli Rishon is off limits. Kli Sheni, at least according to the Sipri, the Mishnah would be permissible. The problem is, the Mishnah does not discuss the middle category. What the Mishnah fails to tell us is, in a case where I'm not putting the spices into the pot, and I'm not putting the spices into the pre-existing bowl. I'm pouring the water from the pot onto the spices. That's what the Rishonim quote other Gemaras that use the phrase called Irui. Irui is aros, it's to pour. And it's unclear from this Mishnah, is Irui treated like a Kli Rishon, and therefore it would be prohibited? Or is Irui treated like a Kli Sheni, and therefore it would be permissible? Now that seems to make all the difference in the world. Because when it comes to our case of the tea bag, so here what I want to do is pour, well, I shouldn't have wanted to do, but I did. I poured water, somebody else poured water from the tea kettle. The tea kettle was a kli rishon. So to put a tea bag, like spice, the tea bag into the pot, that's out of the question. That's the Mishnah. But here I'm not putting the tea bag into the pot, but I'm not pouring the water into a cup either. I'm pouring the water from the tea kettle onto the bag, so that's irui. Is that the tantamount to the first half of the Mishnah that would be prohibited? Or is that the halacha equivalent to the second half of the Mishnah that would be permissible? So from the Mishnah stuff, it's unclear. The Mishnah doesn't talk about it. So we have to go and do some research to figure out what is the status of that middle ground, either from a kli rishon onto something.
The Mishnah says, I'm not able to stop a kahara. That's assuming that the hot content.
Oh, that's right. That's right. They're ready there. That's right. So the Mishnah can't tell the other one. Right. So the Mishnah Gemara tucked away in Maseches Vachim, in the third of the Mount Kamos, where the Gemara is talking about, not about Bishul for Shabbos, that's for sure not. It's talking about the scenario that happens in the Beis HaMikdash, Mishkan, where a person has a korban, a person has a korban chasas, for argument's sake. A kohen has the meat of the korban chasas, he wants to eat it, so he's going to cook it. So he's going to cook the meat of the korban chasas in a pot, and what could possibly go wrong? So far, not yet. But there is a din called nosa. After meat of a korban sits for a certain amount of time, depending on what kind of korban it is, for some it's for a day and a night, some 2 days and a night, whatever the case may be, it reaches the point where it becomes leftover. Once it becomes leftover, then it becomes usher to be in with a punishment of kareis. We're talking about a pretty serious machalas asuras. Comes the pasuk of Chumash Bashi Tzav and tells us, any time you cook korbanos, you are running into a potential nosa problem. Why? Because you're going to cook a piece of meat in the pot. Some of the meat is going to be absorbed into the walls of the pot after, by tomorrow, so that meat that's in the walls of the pot is going to become nosa. How are you ever going to use that pot again? So you have to do something. That pot, that's like cooking chazer now in a pot. Just as if you cook a piece of chazer in a pot, so the chazer goes into the pot, rendering the pot no longer usable. So too, if you cook a regular korban in a pot, it goes into the walls, and then after a certain amount of time, it becomes a trace. It becomes no sir. So what do you do? So the Torah tells us exactly what to do. The Torah says the Basha stop. If it's a metal kli, the kli the choshes here said to vushal bo, umarach b'shutaf b'mayim, that if you cook in a metal pot, so you have to kasher it. You have to do what's called mariko shtifa. Now, mariko shtifa is a little bit more than just standard kashering. That's ready as vachim sugi nasanel. But it's based, it's related to the parish of kashering kelim. It's actually in that context that the Torah says, what about if it's a kli cheres? What if you cooked in an earthenware pot? So the Torah says, a kli cheres, yishaver, you have to break it. Why is that? Because the kli cheres can never be kashered. That's the source that you can't kasher china. How do we know Bizman is there? If you trace up your china, you have to throw it to the garbage. Because the Torah says that when you're cooking a korban in an earthenware pot, there's nothing you could possibly do to salvage that pot because you can never kasher china. You can never actually get the taste out of the china. China is too porous for the taste to come out. So the Torah says that if you're cooking in a metal pot, no problem. You just kasher and finished. So comes the Brayta of Maseches Vachim and has the following. Tadar Rabbanan, in the third of the Maamar Kavah, said him as a Tadar Rabbanan. Asher Tevush Albo, the Torah says that you cooked in this pot. Ein Li'ela Shabisha Bo. I know that if you literally cooked in the pot. Iro L'socha Rosech Minayin. How do you know that if I didn't literally cook in the pot, but I just poured some food out of a pot into a bowl or something, poured some food out of a pot into a container or something, how do you know that also has to be dealt with? How do you know you also have to do Maliko Shtif? You have to kasha that out. Famad Loim Aveshet Vusha Bo Yishavir. Adrasha, Satesh Vusha Bo, Adrasha, Rebbe comes to include, even if I didn't literally cook in the pot, rather I poured the hot contents of a pot onto another container, that other container has to be kashered as well. So Adkan Divya Gemara Maseches Vachim. So again, this Gemara is not talking about Shabbos, it's not talking about Trace Sink. It's talking about a mitzvah in the Beis HaMikdash called Mariko Shtifa. And yet the Braisa includes and says, not only does the din of Mariko Shtifa apply to Bishul proper in a pot, it applies to something that was poured into as well. So now the question becomes, what conclusion can we draw from here? So we have two radically different conclusions to draw. Either one can draw the conclusion from here. Well, if you see from here that just as you have to do Mariko Shtifa for Bishul, so too you have to do Mariko Shtifa for Iroi. That's the equivalent of saying that Iroi is like Bishul. It means when I pour from a Kli Rishon, that's like cooking in a Kli Rishon. So this halacha is not a strange halacha, not a Mechudesh Tikkun halacha. This is the source for the principle that Iroi is treated in halacha like a Kli Rishon. That's one way of approaching this figure. Another way of approaching this figure is saying no, that Iroi in fact is not like a Kli Rishon. And that's why my starting point was I need a pasuk to teach me that I have to do Mariko Shtifa. The chiddush of the pasuk is, even though it's not like Bishul, and in other areas of halacha it's not deemed the equivalent of Bishul, but for this halacha there's a quirk, there's an exception to the gzeres hakasuk. Even though Bishul didn't take place, you still have to do Mariko Shtifa. So it's unclear what the chiddush of this pasuk is. Is the pasuk teaching me that Iroi is Bishul, and therefore we could extrapolate to other areas of halacha as well. Ivri is like Bishul. What do I say? No. Ivri is not like Bishul. It never was like Bishul, and it never will be like Bishul. Why do you have to mriko shtifa? Don't ask any kashas. Kach nemar halacha, a gezeres hakosef. So the two ways of reading this Gemara Maseches Vachim was a major machlokes, the Gedolei Harishonim, between two brothers, between the Rashbam and Rabbeinu Tam. Whenever I quote machlokes Rashbam and Rabbeinu Tam, I always envision how it must have been the two young men growing up together at the Shabbos table. They must have been fighting out about this. One Rishon was saying, yeah, this is a din, just like my kids at the table. Everyone, the same type of Shabbos discussion at the age of 12. So comes the Rashbam and says that Irui is not really like Bishul, and this must be the court. This is the exception to the rule. And Rabbeinu Tam said, no, Irui is like Bishul, and this is not the Yotzei Mechlal. This is the Klal. So two very, very, very different ways of reading this Gemara. What should the din be? Where do we go from here? How does this play out in terms of Shabbos and back to Kashrus and back to Zvachim? So a lot of the discussion now revolved around the fourth of the Ma'amakonis. The Gemara has, in Maseches Pesachim and Daf Ayin Vav and Aleph, a whole series of halachas that are relevant for learning your Adayah. People learn your Adayah, so they learn the halachas of Kashrus. So a lot of sugyas in your Adayah revolve around this Dafas of Maseches Pesachim. Why in the world in the seventh parak of Pesachim is it so much time given to Kashrus? Talking about when you're roasting a carbon Pesach and something goes wrong. Some of the carbon Pesach ends up here and it traces up this and it ruined this and their bleas and their absorption takes. We have a whole daf and a half dedicated to details of carbon Pesach, but in those sugyas of details of carbon Pesach, many of the principles, the underlying principles of Kashrus and Yeridaya play out. So it's in that context that the Gemara quotes us the following bright. Tanakh says to Shmuel. And the fourth of the Ramah Kovitz of Pesachim I involved, it was the Bryce that supported Shmuel. And the Bryce was talking about if you have two foods that touch one another, one is hot and one is cold, or the other one's hot, the other one's cold, they're both hot, they're both cold. What is the impact of kosher status one to another? So if I have, let's say, a piece of chazir that touches a piece of kosher food, they come into contact with each other, how much of the ta'am, how much of the taste transfers from one to another? So the Bryce spells out a whole series of different degrees. Cham l'socham, the absolute worst case scenario, a two pieces of hot food that touch one another. So a hot piece of chazer falls into a hot kosher cholin, or vice versa. A hot cholin falls onto a hot piece of chazer. If everything's hot, so the answer is also, then bliya spread. Heat is the prerequisite for spreading of bliya. Bliya is the taste, the absorption. So taste and absorption spread from one food to another. If everything's hot, that's a disaster. The chamos so chamos, everything's also. The chain, so name, shenosan, so cham also. And similarly, what if one of the foods was cold and one was hot, but the one on the hot, the one that was hot, was the one on the bottom? So that's what the Gemara tells us. It's called tasog avar, that if the bottom one is hot, that's also a problem. Whether that's related to the scientific statement of heat rising or not, another time, another place. But that's the reality. That's Allah's reality, that if a cold food falls onto a hot food, so the heat rises and it traces up the cold food, that's a disaster. Also, and so forth, two for two, or zero for two, whatever you want to call it. So cham and so cham is a problem. Shonen and so cham is a problem. But then the Braita says, what if it's cham and so shonen? What if it's hot that falls into cold? Or what if it's shonen and so shonen? What if it's two cold pieces of food? A piece of chazah touched a cold piece of chicken. Says the Braisa, no big deal, Mediach, just wash it off. So the Braisa seemed to just tell us that there are four cases. Two of them are big problems, when the heat is either on the bottom or in both. That's a very, very serious problem. If the heat is merely on the top piece, or if there's no heat at all, then everything's great. Everything is home free, nothing, no problem, just wash it off, get off the surface, and everything's fine. So yes, the Gemara, really, is that true? Is that true? That when you have a hot piece that falls into a cold piece, all you have to do is just wash it off. That doesn't make any sense, too. Doesn't make any sense. Kevin the Chamu, Ademekele, Yev Shadlo Bala Purta, Klipa Miani Boy. Says the Gemara, if a hot piece falls into a cold piece, there has to be some transferring of taste. Not all that much, because the cold's on the bottom, but a little bit, the degree of what's called Klipa. Klipa means you have to peel off a little bit. You can't. It's not enough just to wash it off. On the other hand, you don't have to throw the whole piece into the garbage. Here we're introduced to this principle in Europe. They're called kidei klipa, meaning the smallest amount to peel off of the food. That's all that's necessary. So The Gemara says, you're right. Ala'ema, we have to amend the braisa a little bit. Cham l'soch tzonin koleif. Tzonin l'soch tzonin mediach. So there are four logical possibilities. Hot into hot, cold into cold, hot into cold, cold into hot. You have to draw a box. And you want to pass the smicha b'chini, you got to get it right in all four cases. So if it's hot into hot, treif, throw the whole thing out. Cold into hot, throw the whole thing out. The bottom rises, heat rises, throw the whole thing out. Hot into cold, not so terrible, not so good, not so terrible. Kidei klipa, cold into cold, just wash it off. These are the rules that the Gemara presented for us. So there was a major machlokes, as we said before, between the Rashbam and Rabbeinu Tam. What do we do with this piece of information? How does this impact on our discussion in terms of Irun? So both the Rashbam and Rabbeinu Tam realized that every case of Irun, if you think about it long enough, think going back to that model of pouring the hot water onto the tea bag, that is in effect a cham l'soch tzonei, because it's coming from a hot source, so the hot source is hot, top source is hot, the bottom that you're pouring onto is cold. That's a classic category number three, that's cham l'soch tzonei. What was the maskana say Gemara? What happened by cham l'soch tzonei? So the Gemara says it's not a total washout. On the other hand, it's not a simple just, clean it off and call it a day. You have that middle category called kidei klipa. You have to reckon with a small peel, a small amount. That's the halachic result of a cham l'soch tzonei. So came the Rashbam and Rabbeinu Tam sitting around the Shabbat table and now fought it out and said, what conclusion can we draw from all the facts that I just said? So Rabbeinu Tam drew the following conclusion. Rabbeinu Tam said that just as the Gemara Pesachim says, when you have cham l'soch tzonei, it affects kidei klipa. So too, if you pour hot water onto a raw food on Shabbos, you cooked kidei klipa. You cooked a little bit of the food. You didn't cook the entire food because it was hot onto cold, so a good chunk of the food wasn't cooked, but a little bit of the food was cooked. On Shabbos, that's not good for us, because on Shabbos, you're not even allowed to cook the smallest amount. So Rabbeinu Tam looked at this Gemara Pesachim and said, just as in Uchos Kashrus, when you have hot going onto cold, it affects the kashrus of the cold to a small amount, to a small degree. So to a Nuchos Shabbos, it affects the permissibility to a small degree. You're not allowed to do it on Shabbos because a little bit, the outermost peel, is going to get cooked. To which the Rashbam responded, no, it's not true. Says the Rashbam to his younger brother, Ben Thomas, the younger brother, said the Rashbam, the older brother, the younger brother, said, no, not true. Just because a little bit of taste was transferred, that doesn't mean that cooking took place. Says the Rashbam, cooking is one category, transferring of taste is another category. In order to cook, cooking only takes place inside a clean rishon, in the pot. Transferring of taste could happen derech iroy, but cooking only takes place in a pot. And bottom line, the Rashbam and Rabbeinu Tam kept on fighting it out. What is the halacha? Can bishul take place derech iroy, or does bishul not take place derech iroy? Nafkamina lahalacha, in terms of Uchos Shabbos, can you lechatchila take hot water and pour it onto raw food on Shabbos? According to the Rashbam, the answer is yes. Because according to the Rashbam, that's not bishul. According to the Rashbam, the Gemara in Zvachim was a chiddush in Uchos Karbanos, nothing to do with the other areas of halacha. According to the Rashbam, the Gemara in Pesachim was talking about your day, about kashrus issues, that wasn't addressing the issue of bishul. According to the Rashbam, pouring hot water onto raw food is just not bishul. Maybe it's a kashrus issue. Maybe it's a beis hamikdash issue, but it's not a Hilchos Shabbos issue, and therefore it's mutar lechatchila to pour hot water onto raw food, including onto a hot tzibig, which Rabbeinu Tam responded, chalila b'chalila. It's an issa d'oraisa, Rabbeinu Tam said. Because just as it's a problem in the Beis HaMikdash, Rabbeinu Tam understood the Beis HaMikdash is not the exception to the rule, but rather it's the rule. And just as it's a problem in Uchos Kashrus, because Belias and Bishul are identical according to Rabbeinu Tam, it is a problem in Uchos Shabbos as well. And pouring hot water onto raw food is tantamount to Bishul Deraisa, at least on the Kedei Klipa, which is still a problem on the level of Deraisa. So when all the dust settles in the Shaila, what do we say? So Tosfos and Masechet Shabbos, Mamish throws their hands up. Tosfos and Masechet Shabbos, Daf Mem Beis and Beis. First quotes of Ben Shmuel, the Rashbam, maybe Rav Yerik, Klisheni, and he references the whole Gemara in Masechet Tzachim. And then he says, L'ri nirat yirikikli rishon. He brings the Gemara of Masechet Zevachim. And then finally, at the end, you skip down, it's four lines in the bottom, the nirat. After those three dots, the nirat, the irale, havikikli rishon, v'okli shen. This is Rabbi Natam speaking. It's not really klivisha, it's not really klisheni. On the vasho kate klipa. That karmel and kishmul, b'yamatasa, gavar. This is Rabbi Natam's view. So at the end of the day, Tosfos leaves us hanging between the two Halakha brothers, Rabbi Natam and the Rashbam. We're not quite sure what the din is. Does Iri kuf, does Iri not cook? One thing we know for certain, even if Iri, for whatever reason, doesn't cook, it does cause kashrus problems. That's the Perush Gemara. So let's go back now to the shalagat this week, and then we'll go back 30 years ago. The shalagat this week was somebody poured some, they were cooking pasta with cheese, whatever it was, and they poured it onto the some of the water onto the fleshy thing. So that has nothing to do with the machlekes Rashbam. At any time, you can't hide behind Rashbam and say, well, it's not a klivi shown, so it's okay, not so terrible. No. The Gemara said beferish that it hilchas iroi in terms of your daya. In terms of Ruchas Kashrus, that was the Gemara Masechet Pesachim. In terms of Ruchas Kashrus, it does pose a problem. It traips up kide klipa of the sink. So that's really nice. So if I could take a knife and scrape away the sink, that would be great. It's easier than scraping the sink. I imagine that the wife would be happier than scraping the sink if you just kasha the sink. So if you pour hot water onto the sink, so the same way it went in through an iroi, it can go out through an iroi as well. So in Hilchos Kashrus, we can't. There have been a time in Rashbam not relevant. They all agree. But going back to the Shiloh 30 years ago, what would the din be vis-a-vis Hilchos Shabbos? Do we have a right to say to follow the view of the Rashbam? Do we have a right to follow? Do we have force to say we follow the view of Rabbi Natan? So the Chora we should say as follows. That's right. It means it would be also. What you're saying is it would be also. For all practical purposes, would be also right. Every little tea leaf. I said also to make. I didn't say to drink. I said also to make. Wait. I didn't say it again. Wait. So let me ask the Shabbat twofold. So someone's going to come and ask, Rabbi, can I make tea in this way on Shabbos? Can I pour water from a tea kettle from an urn onto a tea bag on Shabbos? So the answer to that question is who you're asking the question to. If you're posing the question to the Rashbam, so the answer is yes. Rashbam Taske, that's mutar lechatchila to make tea that way. Because his opinion was that Iroi is a problem in Karbonos, and Iroi is a problem in Yerodea and Kashrus, but Iroi is not called Bishul, and therefore, in terms of Vilcha Shabbos, it's not Mavashal, not even expected nothing. The Rashbam never heard of his younger brother's Kedek Klipa. According to the Rashbam, in terms of Bishul Mashabbos, it's mutar lechatchila, which is exactly what the Rashbam said. Rabbi Shmuel may be right. The Rashbam in Masechet Shabbos says it black and white. That's mutlach hatchila to make tea in that manner. So if someone would ask the Rashbam, what do I do? We know what he would say. If you would ask Rabbi Natam what to do, he would say, make tea like my brother said. Achil Shabbos deraisa. Yeah, be mevashel. Can they cleave us? This is deraisa bishul. The halacha, nobody today should be making tea that way. We passed it unequivocally like, not like the Rashbam, for sure. We follow Rabbi Natam, maybe more machin than Rabbi Natam, the Mishnebura paskin, the halacha, the shach, and the Mishnebura, all the gdolei poskin paskin, that we would never, ever in a million years make tea in that way by pouring hot water directly onto a tea bag. So that's out of the question in terms of making tea that way. But the person didn't ask me whether they were allowed to make tea that way. They asked me, I made the tea already. Now what? Can I drink the tea? So at the time, we started to analyze the shayla. We came to the realization that the Mishnebura quotes to Magen Avraham that any time that something is permissible according to some viable sheet in halacha, even though we won't practice that way, it's not accepted halacha, but b'di'eved, vis-a-vis the after the fact of drinking it, we'll rely on that shita after the fact. So at the time, we came up with the following idea. Now, if you would have asked me before you made the tea, I would have said, no way to make tea that way, but you didn't ask me, you made it already. B'di'eved, we could rely on the Rashbam, and we could drink the tea. So that was the psak that was given at the time, that b'di'eved, you're allowed to drink the tea. So at the time, I remember that the father, Palabos at the time, said to me, I don't feel comfortable drinking this tea. And I remember his lashon. He said, I want to live my life l'chatchila. I don't want to live my life with the yevet. Now, I don't think he exactly understood what I was saying, but it was an interesting idea that he was saying. He doesn't want to live his life with the yevet. So why do I still remember that point? Not only because it was interesting, a line that he said. So a few years later, one of his children was in the parsha of Shiduchim, this particular balabas, and somebody called me. I knew the family from Riverdale. Somebody called me for a reference about the family. So all of a sudden, I remembered the maisa about the tea. The person who they were asking about was not the one who made the tea. It was another child. So otherwise, I would have said the person didn't know how to make tea and shop. So I would have said that. But they wanted to know, what about the family? So I said, listen, I know the family. But let me tell you a story about this family. I didn't give them all the gory details about the tea and Shabbos, but I said, this is a family that wants to live their lives b'chatchila, not b'diavad. That was the way I encapsulated the family. Said, I don't know whether the shidduch ever happened or not, but at least they gave it a fighting chance. The tea may have made a shidduch someday. Moved the story ahead several years later. The winner is learned, so I'm fairly comfortable with that sock of years ago. Over the course of the years, we were learning the Shabbos and Yeshiva, so came across that the Chazanish writes that principle, the Poskim write, that if something is mutter according to some, so you could rely on the Yevon and not opinion, says the Chazanish, that's not always true. That's only true when the Sheet of Sayochid is still basically in the ballpark. It's still being known a little bit. Still, you know, we're Mishyachis, but we accept it to some degree. If you have a sheet that one Rishon somewhere in the last 2,000 years, somebody wrote the Sefer Hazas Tavara somewhere that something should be mutter, that's called what's called the sheet that's chuyah legamim min halacha. Because even within the halachic system, there are certain sheets that we don't follow, and then there are other sheets that have been rejected, we don't even consider them anymore. So the Chazanish, in listing off, the only one that's relevant for us, an example of a sheet that's nischem in halacha is the Rashbam sheet is nischem in halacha. Nobody followed that. In the last 1,000 years, no one's ever made Titus. No one's thought of following the Rashbam Shita. The Rashbam didn't make Titus either because Rashbam never saw a tea bag anyway. He didn't come to Europe till much later. But the Rashbam saw about other kinds of spices. So the Chazanish says that he doesn't think that we can pull out the Rashbam out of a hat and say that's called the B'dievin. Here I started to get such Chalish Tadav. 10 years earlier, I had been mocked that cup of tea. But I felt good because I remember they threw it out anyway because he didn't want to live his life B'dievin. But then, I remember I heard from Rabbi Willing once that he was quoting this Chazanish, and I remember he said, why is the Rashbam Nisham Ravach Lagamre, Lagamre, Lagamre? Taisa spends a lot of time in your day in Shiru. We spend days and days, talking with the Rashbam, the Rai, sometimes you see a Shita that's quoted that no one ever heard of, no one ever said, no one ever thinks of. That's like a Shita Nisham Lagamre in Allah. Here, the Rashbam, a very real player on the page in Masechta Shabbos, in Shulchan Aruch it's discussed. There's a long, long shach in your day that pilfers about it. Not in the Chavin HaLoch at all. So Rabbi Willing thought that he wasn't so convinced. He didn't know why that should be a Chavin HaLoch. So here I felt great. That even in Tum Tzavayim, where they would have drank the tea, I would have relied on Rabbi Willing's version that the Rashbam was not in the Chavin HaLoch yet. At the end of the day, the tea is long gone. The Rashbam Shita has not really been accepted. But in Tum Tzavayim, it's still important. We have to be careful not to misapply the Rashbam. Not to think that the Rashbam would be matter in the case of the sink. So this week, somebody asked me a shout about that. I got all excited to start to bring up these memories of 30 years ago. But Lamaisa, we don't make tea this way. For that matter, we don't even make tea in other ways. This is already beyond the scope, maybe another top, another place. There's a further shiloh. What about making tea? Mama should have cliche. Like the Mishnah sounds like it's okay. So remember, I gave a little bit of a statement before. I said a disclaimer. I said, even though the Mishnah sounds like cliche, everything's okay, we have a variety of reasons why we don't do it. One of the big reasons why we refrain from doing things in cliche is that there's a Mishnah at the end of Masechta Shabbos that speaks about what's called the halacha Kali Habishal. Kali Habishal means food that's very, very easily susceptible to cooking. So the Mishnah says that is not allowed to be cooked even in a cliche. So this Mishnah is not always true. It's most of the time true. The problem is that the Rishonim write that we're not quite sure what our Kali Habishal, we're not called the Kali Habishal. So we have almost like a turned an about faith about this Mishnah. The Mishnah says, cliche, everything's good. So the Mishnah right, not so sure. Maybe everything's a suffer Kali Habishal Bizman Hazeh. Tea may very well be a Kali Habishal Bizman Hazeh. And therefore, most people refrain from making tea in a cliche. I'm well aware of the fact that there are some who don't. Rob had a very famous tradition in the name from his grandfather, Rav Chaim, who had certain coolers in terms of making tea. But again, those who have that tradition, follow that tradition, those who know that tradition, so generally don't make tea in clichés. Some don't like making teas in clichés also, and that's really further debate, right, way beyond the scope right now. But at least the original shayla of making tea, derech irid, from the clean rishon onto the tea bag, so has a lot of lumbus to it, and it touches a few sugyas. It impacts the Masechta Shabbos, the Masechta Zvach, the Masechta Tzachim, or Chaim in Yeredech, Shabbos, and Kashas, all mixed together, and that underlying fundamental machlekes Rashbam and Rebbeinu Tam, how to make sense of all the Gemaras, is the Gemara ultimately saying that Iru is clean, is mevashel, the Gemara ultimately saying Iru is not mevashel. That's the Shaila. And then, after you decide what you're going to do, then you have to decide if you did it already, then what happens to the food after. So Reb Moshe was making that. The Rav was okay with the Klisheni. Reb Moshe was making the Klisheni. But many, many others were not comfortable either of those two. So Yesh V'Yesh and that one.
I guess.
Hang on.